Buddhism holds four noble truths. The first is the inevitability of suffering, human suffering. The next three involve the cause of suffering, its end, and the path that one can follow to end it. Unlike our Buddhist sisters and brothers, suffering is something that many Protestants don't really talk about all that often, perhaps because it's difficult, maybe it makes us uncomfortable. Our Catholic siblings are far more conversant with the topic, and some see suffering itself as redemptive. Most Catholic churches also feature a lot of images that feature the suffering of Jesus, including the crucifix, the cross with the corpus attached. In most Protestant churches, you'll see a cross without the corpus, and that's to emphasize resurrection rather than crucifixion. Crucifixion is a horrible form of torture and execution that involves a painful and an ignominious death. And it can be seen as human suffering at its worst. Imagine yourself as one of Jesus's followers in those days or weeks or months or years or even centuries after the crucifixion. How do you explain the suffering of Jesus on the cross? How do you make sense of what happened? You know, Paul writes about it extensively, saying that in our baptism, we die and rise with Christ. And Paul acknowledges that the cross is a scandal to the Judeans and foolishness to the Gentiles. And there's something powerful that Paul is trying to convey by reappropriating the image of the cross, pairing it with resurrection. You know, early Christian theologians tried to work out the why of Jesus's death. Why did this have to happen? Apparently being a threat to the rule of empire and to Roman collaborators in Judea apparently just wasn't reason enough for that to happen in their minds. Tertullian, one of the fathers of the church, wrote in the third century espousing the idea that Jesus' death happened in order for humanity to receive salvation by satisfying God's need for an atoning sacrifice. Dom Crossan, a wise New Testament scholar, once quipped that that's not the kind of God that he would like to meet in a dark alley. And later, St. Anselm of Canterbury in the 11th century more clearly espoused the idea that Christ's death on the cross functioned as a gift to God on behalf of humanity to restore the order of justice subverted by sin. Where's the evidence that God would demand a sacrifice of his own son in order to restore relationship with humanity? What does this explanation do to describe the character of a God who we know to be merciful and loving? All of these theories are trying to work out a reason for suffering. In this case, the suffering of Jesus on the cross. Perhaps the why is that empire is morally bankrupt, and it thrived by military domination and extracting wealth from those who could least afford it. But lots of revolutionaries have given their lives for a cause. Jesus was a different kind of radical, who in John's gospel says, no one has greater love than this, than to lay down one's life for one's friends. The way of love can lead to suffering. So why all of the theological muddle over the millennia to try to explain that Jesus loved his friends and followers so much that he was willing to give his own life for them? His suffering is rooted in his willingness to engage in self-sacrifice. And that is grounded in love. The truth is that we all suffer. And we all suffer in different ways at multiple points on the journey through life. In 1960, Dr. King wrote, "My personal trials have also taught me the value of unmerited suffering. As my sufferings mounted, I soon realized that there were two ways that I could respond to my situation, either to react with bitterness or to seek transformation, to transform that suffering into a creative force. I decided to follow the latter course. Recognizing the necessity for suffering, I have tried to make of it a virtue. If only to save myself from bitterness, I have attempted to see my personal ordeals as an opportunity to transform myself and heal the people involved in the tragic situation which now obtains. I've lived these last few years with the conviction that unearned suffering is redemptive." He continues, "There are some who still find the cross a stumbling block and consider it foolishness. But I'm more convinced than ever before that it's the power of God unto social and individual salvation." Now, while Dr. King's self-sacrifice and suffering were grounded in love, and let us remember that Cornel West reminds us that justice is what love looks like in public, I don't think that all suffering is redemptive. Physical suffering due to disease is not, in my view, redemptive. It's something that we can and should ameliorate. Karen Labax, who is an ethicist and a UCC minister who used to teach at the Pacific School of Religion, writes, "The only redemptive suffering is that which is voluntarily undertaken in the cause of justice and the effort to combat disease. While the moral obligation to relieve suffering is not distinctively Christian, it is certainly central to Christian belief. Christians who, out of their compassion, risk their lives by exposing themselves to contagion in an effort to heal others can be said to be modeling Christ's compassion." But what are we to say about the everyday suffering that comes with simply living? I invite you to pause for a moment and think of an occasion when you yourself have suffered, as long as that occasion is not so acute or so recent that it's re-traumatizing. It might be grieving the loss of a spouse or a child or a parent. It might be rejection by a loved one, perhaps a personal setback, or when the physician delivers an unwelcome diagnosis. Maybe somebody's betrayed you. It might be an unrealized dream that continues to haunt you. The ghost of loss gets into us, and it can cause suffering. Many times when we suffer, we feel alone in that anguish. Sometimes nobody knows that you're suffering because you are good at keeping a stiff upper lip and keeping on going, putting one foot in front of the other. But inside, a piece of you feels as if you're dying. Each one of us suffers in this way. Even when we feel alone, we are not. God is with us. We are not alone. Jesus tells us at such times to come to him with your heavy burden, and he will give you rest. Jesus himself underwent one of the worst forms of suffering imaginable, and in doing so, he allowed himself to have the full experience of human agony. Have you ever sung that song? I know some of you who have been at the 6 o'clock service may remember it. It's a really short song that John Bell introduced to me. It's actually from Burundi. It goes like this. Come bring your burdens to God. Come bring your burdens to God. Come bring your burdens to God. For Jesus will never say no. Join me. Come bring your burdens to God. Come bring your burdens to God. Come bring your burdens to God. For Jesus will never say no. Come bring your burdens to God. Come bring your burdens to God. Come bring your burdens to God. For Jesus will never say no. Not only is God there when you are suffering, so are your fellow members at Plymouth. We form a family that is here to support one another, lifting up the joys and the sufferings in prayer and in action. Paul writes to the Galatians that we are to bear one another's burdens, and in this way we fulfill the law of Christ. What's the law of Christ? It's love. We can't get around suffering because it's a part of life. But we can show up for one another with love. And that helps our kindred to get through the rough times of suffering. And sometimes that looks like a cup of tea. Sometimes it looks like a pot of soup, or listening compassionately, or sending a note of encouragement to someone. Just showing up is something that almost all of us can do for one another. You know, even if we don't think that we have the right words to say on that kind of occasion, simply showing up can provide solidarity and love that helps alleviate a bit of someone else's suffering. You know, I see people at Plymouth do this all the time. Our congregational visitors drop in on some of our elders to say hello, just to be present. Our Stephen ministers have an ongoing caring relationship with another member of our congregation, and our faith community nurses, hello Melanie, provide amazing, compassionate visits to those who are experiencing medical crises. You know, I was with a family recently who've been going through a sequence of major medical issues, suffering, and they told me how helpful it was to have a faith community nurse show up and guide them through the process and offer a prayer. You know, the English word compassion has two Latin roots, cum and passio, which means to suffer with. So when we share someone's burden, we do share a bit of their suffering with love and with empathy. Now, that isn't to say that we should be doormats or lose our footing by over-identifying with another person's suffering. We may not be called to lay down our lives for those we love, but being present to one another, acknowledging another's anguish, letting them know that they are loved and cared about and not alone, that can be a help. Suffering is a real part of life. So is God's presence. So is the love we share. May it be so. Amen.